Hey.
Hello. Slava Ukraine.
Hello, I'm Slava. How are you doing?
Okay, I guess. I think yesterday was a very important reminder because we celebrated the beginning of the Maidan Revolution, and which is officially called the Revolution of Dignity in Ukraine. And even for me, it was a good reminder that what we're facing today hasn't started on February. And basically, what we're facing today, including the ongoing war and genocide, is this almost 9-year-old, 8-year-old punishment by Russia for us wanting to be free. So yeah. Even for Ukrainians, sometimes this is very hard to keep in perspective, but it was a good day to remind everyone else that yeah. we've been there fighting that for more than eight months. How are you?
And it was so like inspirational, so to see loads of people share their photos from Maidan, from, you know, all the way back then, 2013, 2014, just to see, like, you know, we spoke about this so many times during our podcast with our guests, that for many Ukrainians, young Ukrainians, we've lived through, like, you know, at least two revolutions. And it's just been such a big part of why we are the way we are today, that it's just important to, remind yourself. But I also wanted to raise this and bring it here because I spent the whole day, and I've seen that a lot of people that have been on this podcast have spent the whole day doing the same thing. The crazy thing that the Vikings Netflix TV show did on their social media, and I don't actually know if it's in the show because I don't watch it and I don't know what happened, but Ukrainians are pretty pissed off about calling Yaroslav the ruler of Kiev Rus, a ruler of northern Russia. So yeah. it's been a ride today.
But it's an important thing, and I don't think that people understand that, or maybe some do, but regardless, I think we're so sensitive about it, not just because it's historic inaccuracy, right? But because it reproduces absolutely the same propaganda that is being used to justify the ongoing genocide. That claiming that Ukrainian history is in fact Russian history, and Ukrainian roots are in fact Russian roots, and all these very famous talking points that we've been, as Ukrainians, hearing all our lives, basically, are now being picked up by Western productions, and who go and make, you know, such a horribly, poorly researched shows that basically reproduce genocidal propaganda. And I think it's also important because of the topic of today's and our featured Ukrainian, and we're gonna introduce it in a sec.
That just before we do that, I wanted to remind everyone who's listening to us for the first time, and for people who are joining us on Twitter Spaces as well, what we're here for today. Maxim and I started Ukrainian Spaces now, what, 8 months ago? Maybe, yeah, around 8 months ago, to elevate Ukrainian voices and to decolonize conversations about Ukraine by actually giving the right for Ukrainians to express themselves and teach others and tell others about their own country and their own experiences themselves without having to go through, you know, Western pundits and various other people. So we created the space to be able to support this effort that I think Ukrainians have been awesome at anyway. But it's just been important to also create a community where we could share with each other and with others everything we knew, but everything we thought and we know the world should know as well. So that's why we're here.
Absolutely. And big thanks to our Patreon sponsors, because Ukrainian Spaces is 100% independent and listener supported. And both our live shows and recorded versions as podcast episodes exist thanks only to our Patreon sponsors and their generous support through all these months and their growing generous support. So if it's your first time here listening live, or you're listening as a podcast later, if you like it, please consider joining our community, our family of Patreon sponsors, and you'll get lots of extra bonus stuff being a Patreon. But most importantly, during our live shows, you also have exclusive right to join and ask questions our favorite our featured Ukrainians in person or through our team. So again, guys, thank you so much. That's a great job and a great mission you're supporting us with. Anyhow, I think, Valeria, if you don't mind, I think we can introduce our featured Ukrainian. I'm very excited about this conversation because watching this person reconnecting with her Ukrainian roots has been such a joy these months, and a lot of inspiration came from there as well. But we have a golden rule, and basically we always ask our featured Ukrainians to introduce themselves. So Nadia, you're here?
Hello everyone. Thank you for opportunity to speak out about everything we are having lost years, even. What can I say?
Absolutely. I'm happy to hear your voice. But a huge fan of your voice as well.
Thank you.
It's separate joy. But
it's not being creepy at all. I'm joking.
Very creepy, yeah. Anyhow, look, we always ask our featured Ukrainians to introduce themselves. So if you don't mind, please tell everyone else who you are, where you come from, and maybe a little bit, how your life has changed in recent months due to genocide.
Okay, so basically, my name is Nadia Shapoval. I'm 32 years old. I'm a human, first of all. And after all, I'm Ukrainian, and I'm working in the field of ethnology and in researching of Ukrainian beauty in nowadays and my roots, and I'm working, traveling around Ukraine and gathering, I don't know, artifacts that are very important to me, first of all. So I'm not doing it as a professional researcher or historical on a historical basis. I'm just like doing it from my heart. And that's basically it. And my profession is creative direction. So I'm working in the fields of fashion, art, and I connect everything I see and research. I connect and do it internationally. I try to bring Ukrainian heritage I'm a bridge between you. I'm trying to be a bridge of Ukrainian heritage and international world, and bringing and make understandment to the people that Ukrainians are kind of special, as special as every nation is special. So I'm trying to bring out the beautiness of Ukraine. This is basically my main aim now.
And if you are comfortable sharing, maybe I'd like to share with everyone else maybe a bit how your life has changed since the war started, because these are kind of stories that I think are extra important these days, and we love sharing with everyone else, especially who's not Ukrainian.
Yeah, of course, it changed a lot. And I think, first of all, it changed me as a human, because I got a specter of such a feelings that I think only war can gift to us. I call it a gift because it's very important to bring also light in all this darkness, you know? So I prefer to call it a gift to understand all this specter of feelings, from the terrible pain to incredible proudness. So yeah, I'm changed, and my life changed also. Of course, I'm changed because I'm gonna cry always after our victory, remembering the days that we are going through. And and this experience is precious. What can I say? We are forming a new nation. I'm 32, I'm young, and I understand that that everything I see and I feel now is something that I'm going to miss when I'm going to be in much bigger age, you know, if you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I say, like, despite that this is the absolute worst times that we're living, but in a way they're also absolutely the best times because there's so much stuff that you finally see so much clearer.
Exactly. Before the war, I was also trying to clarify my vision sometimes. Because I'm working with images a lot, I work with my eyes, because all I see, I try to transform into objects or photographs or whatsoever. So before I was, for example, traveling to Japan because I love Japan a lot. And going there for me is something also like, it's like a like earthquake for me. So it's just like a splash of new emotions, of new people around me, like completely different world. And when I was coming back to Ukraine after those trips, I was having like a new eyes, like, because I was seeing Europe in a different way after spending time in Japan. Now I'm seeing life in a different way without going to Japan or traveling or whatsoever. I just see my country with a new perspective. And it changed a lot also my way of work.
But, you know, your sort of passion for understanding Ukraine and specifically your interest in ethnology and, you know, studying the different characteristics of Ukrainian people and like the differences and all of that didn't start just now. And the people that follow you know that this has been a big kind of passion and part of your, I guess, work, but also identity and everything as well. And I was just wondering sort of, how did you get there earlier than a lot of people? Because I can like say honestly that, you know, for me, I did get much more interested in things like history, culture, and everything else of Ukraine at such a depth only now. And I was just wondering, was there anything from your personal experience or your, you know, art or anything else that made you pay more attention and sort of focus all of the things, your work around it?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good question because I work more than 5 years in this field, which is nothing actually, comparing to our huge history. And every day I understand that, oh my God, my lifetime is too short to read more, to understand more, and even to meet people. But I do my best, you know. And I think it's very complex question because I was born in kind of special family because my grandmother and grandfather, they were my grandfather was a scientist and my grandmother was a doctor, but they were big friends to Ukrainian dissidents. They were like me now with my friends, like sitting at the same table, going to restaurants, camping, and on Pripyat River together with Vasil Stus, with Ivan Svetlichny, with whole core of Ukrainian dissidents, 60s movement, Шестидесятники, we call them. And I was growing up sitting at the same table with Yevgen Sverstyuk. And as a kid, I was just listening to his stories, you know. And my grandmother and mother, they were always repeating me the same about Ukraine, about our struggle to freedom, about our difference from the rest, that about Russians also. I was just raised like that. And then I got, as a teenager, I was very complicated person and I rejected everything. And I rejected my family for, I think, 7 years. And I went globally. So I was just like studying, and I was very interested into art, cinema. I was traveling also as a model, and I was just like soaking international global context. And then I came back to Ukraine at the age of 25. And I realized that I want to work and live in Ukraine. After studies in Italy and modeling around the world, I realized that I love Ukraine. I just can't live in any other place. I mean, I do like Europe, but I just prefer Kyiv, because Kyiv have very vibrant and special vibes, and and my friends and conversation I had are precious to me. So yeah, it was like a choice. And I started to work in Ukraine in the field of Ukrainian fashion, and then international fashion as a stylist. And then I got depressed, because I was just like, you know, I felt that I have more to say than just working in a field of fashion and doing like commercial and non-commercial jobs. But on the other hand, I just felt that I have something more. So I started to dig myself. And yeah, I slowly came back to my family, and I realized that it's a treasure that I was actually closing my eyes at. And slowly I was, thanks God, my grandmother was alive at that time, and I was speaking to her. And then I started doing ceramics and researching shapes of my future ceramics. And I realized that I want to use Ukrainian shapes. And then I start to research Ukrainian crafts. And that's how I end up with my expeditions all over Ukraine now, talking to artisans, museums, and collecting all the information inside me. That's it's like shortly, briefly. I told you my story.
But you know, I was listening to you, and you know, when you were saying that you rejected your like family, rejected your roots, and you know, and then came back to it. I think, and I hope you don't mind me saying, I think that's been an experience that a lot of us Ukrainians have gone through at some point as well, in the sense that, you know, I mean, I'm not in the sense that Ukrainian culture and all of these things were uncool, but like we thought that somewhere else was maybe cooler and better and more exciting. And so, you know, for a very long time, spent a lot of time trying to like find new things in life, whereas now, and I guess for you, this process, and we speak about it here through the lens of like self-decolonization, I guess, that we have to slowly, step by step, and I think the war just accelerated this, but we have to realize that, you know, a lot of the answers to, as you say, what we've been looking for is back at home and back with our culture and back with a lot of the like rich history of where we come from. So really appreciative of you sharing that with everyone.
Yeah, but what I understand, that part of the process of every personality is always rejection in a way, because after all, I mean, it's normal part of being a teenager to reject, especially if you have very strong family, but family that actually even dictates to you some things. So yeah, my rejection was more protest to my family than protest to Ukraine, but it was like this, my family is actually all about Ukraine, so it was also protest against. But on the other hand, I don't want to change anything, because not everybody understands that actually your earth, your soil can heal you in a way. Sometimes you just need to slow down and talk to it in a way. Ask it, who am I? What I'm doing here? I mean, I don't suggest to people to work as a researcher or whatsoever, but just like try to connect to green around you, to the trees, to see to the landscape, and sometimes you will find the answers. So yeah, this is what I'm doing constantly, and the most happy moments of my life, I spend. Traveling around my country.
Yeah, this sounds very profound to me as well. I think I never valued or cherished these simple things as just, you know, touching the land where you grew up, literally sometimes, or favorite trees that you grew up in. Since my village where I was growing up in now, in occupation, every day you feel a bit like physical pain that you cannot do that. But it also, it feels sometimes that it blocks inside you opportunities to reconnect with your roots, because physically you cannot go back home and you cannot unlock those things that you, otherwise you could have, you know, just do by being physically there, if it makes sense.
Maxim, I completely understand you, because I felt the same. I was born in Kyiv, and I felt the same when the Russian troops were close to Kyiv and in the beginning of full-scale war. I felt rebirth when they left, you know? I just felt that I'm having my home. My home is not taken away. And to be honest, I'm sure that you're going to be back at your village very soon.
Absolutely. I have no doubt about it. No, we're...
So, yeah. So keep on thinking like that. It will happen very soon, sooner than we are thinking about.
Yep, absolutely. Nahia, I wanted to also ask you a bit of... as Valeria mentioned, some of the stuff that you started doing and was incredibly impressing and inspiring. And even before the war started and genocide started, the full-scale invasion. So the company that you launched with, may I call her your friend, but the fellow artist, Masha Reva Nadia, in 2018. And what I loved about that project and that initiative, that basically you guys worked to incorporate a lot of traditional craft techniques and materials, very ancient one, into something that was going to be relevant for many people, whether it's pottery or what is something that people can use, vases and everything else. But the most important and most kind of... impressive for me was that you guys also digged deeper than most people do, and started incorporating things from Tripilla culture. And if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So I started Nadia, my personal project, in 2018, and I started it with my friend in a collaboration. So we did a collaboration with Masha Reva, and Masha taught me a lot in way of creative thinking. And as an artist, she's an amazing artist, and I really am grateful to her that she opened up me also in a way of artistic thinking. And when we started, I had an idea that I want to do a pottery with Ukrainian heritage shapes. And I, as a stylist, and I was doing a lot of for international brands and magazines, I knew from the beginning how to make the visual thing, how to make it beautiful and catchy. I had amazing photographers, friends, all over the world, who were willing to help me to make the beautiful visual videos. And I decided that I'm going to do it and put it in a in Ukrainian context, because for me it's very important. This is something I love, so I started from it. I started to research shapes, and then we start to work, and I start to study pottery, because I actually did every shape by my hands, and yeah, and Masha was painting it. And
can I ask you, because I think it's so important, especially for foreign audience,
yeah,
why you were so fascinated by such an ancient culture, and most foreigners do not even know.
So this is the first part of my brand, was Masha Reva and me. And with this collaboration, I was traveling all over London Design Week, Salone del Mobile in Milano, and Eindhoven Dutch Design Week. So this collaboration was seen in different countries, and also was ordered by different people. And just to sum up, our objects are in beautiful spaces, and also brand Jacques Mew bought a vase and put it in their restaurant. And I mean, that's how I started to promote Ukraine through my product. Then my second collaboration was together with a Ukrainian fashion brand named Bevza, who is showing in, who is officially in schedule of New York Fashion Week. It's pretty old brand in Ukraine, and it has big awareness in the world. So, and they proposed me to make the line of ceramic small things like jewelry or whatsoever. And it was, at the time, it was a quarantine. And I actually catched up the last plane from Greece to Ukraine in purpose, because I decided that I want to spend this lockdown in Ukraine because it's my home. This is very important for me. Yeah. And so I arrived, and she proposed me, and I realized, yeah, I have time and I can research it. And I was always fascinated by this culture, or Kukuteni Tripilion culture, which is more than 5,000 years old. And it was spread on the old territory of Ukraine, moving from the western part of Ukraine to the Crimea. So Kukuteni Tripilion culture is, it was very, by the period, it has three periods, and the, let's say the blooming period of it was in the central Ukraine. And it was found actually not 150 years, approximately 150 years ago, by Vikenty Khoika, who found this settlement not far from Kiev. And I started to just constantly taking my car and driving to Tripilia region, watching the landscapes. This is the most important thing actually in my work, because when I see the landscape, I imagine people that were 5,000 years ago there and seeing the same. And I realized that they were always picking up amazing places to live, because it was always a river near, it was always the beautiful fields around, and they were always on top. Yeah, and this is how Tripilia looks like even now. So, yeah, I was fascinated about it, and then I start to read and connect to real scientists, and that's how I start to do these objects. My main aim of these objects were like that, because I was thinking like that, okay, Bevza is well known in the United States, and I wanted to, with these objects, I wanted to show that we had amazing, huge civilization, let's say, because still there is doubts. Was it civilization or not? But it's just the details. But still, it was like huge one culture thing 5,000 years ago with amazing strong pottery, like almost like Mexican, of course not so much detailed, but in a way also very amazing. And we don't have anything left from there because they didn't have like iron. Yeah, they had some kind of a little bit of jewelry from iron, but a little bit. But and they didn't have a veil at the time. Even doing harvest, they were taking sani. How to say it in English? Sorry,
I don't even know. I can't.
Yes, slates. Slates. Yeah, they were using the slates and putting the bull. They didn't have a wheel, but they had amazing pottery, and they had two floor buildings at that time, which is amazing for me. You know, I'm speaking now like a maniac about it because I'm still researching this I'm still seeing it. Yeah, I know. Now I just recently got back, like months ago. I was in Podilia region, and I was walking through the field, which just was like preparing to the winter. You know, they again digged the ground, the soil. So I was just walking through the endless field with my friends who are working in a local museum as a historical museum. They are archaeologists. They're very young people. We are together, and they just brought me there, and they told me, okay, here was a settlement. Just look down. And I'm looking down, and all over I see is just like ceramics. I'm just picking up ceramics from the field. That's it. So, and it was very, very outstanding for me, because it was just lying down there. I mean, so this huge civilization was so big and strong, so many people, that actually it's even the pottery are too much for archaeologists, cannot actually dig it out. So, you know, you can just pick it up.
No, but it's amazing how much you can find in places where you never thought of looking before. I know it sounds cheesy, but it's true. Just to also, you know, go back to our, I guess, reality of war, I wanted to ask you just how do you think art and in general culture and I guess fashion can help form part of like Ukraine's resistance when it comes to war? And perhaps, you know, because a lot of people think of it as like, I don't know, sometimes as like extra or as luxury or whatever it is, but actually it's a really powerful tool as well to help shift narratives, shift perspectives. And I just wanted to know how you felt about that aspect of what we're experiencing today.
Well, I'm sure this is very a strong weapon we have in our hands, art and mind and visual thing. And all of us are using it. The most important is to speak out about ourselves and to give understanding that we are the same. I mean, we are having a lot of things to say and to show. This is what we are doing. This is what I see all my friends are doing. We are working and showing that we are here. That's it. We are already integrated in the international context. And I had, of course, I had a huge period of being very down and not doing anything for 4 months. But later on, slowly, I started to coming back to life. And now, for example, I'm working in a huge team as a creative director. I do have also my partners. Also, we are 5 creative directors in one team because we are preparing huge project now, which is going to happen in February in New York. We are doing the project name is I Am You Are, and it's everything about Ukraine and Ukrainian brands and technologies and craft. And we are bringing more than 150 brands in New York for 3 days, showing, just showing us in a new way, using our skills of visual language. We are now creating very interesting story, and I'm very excited about it. And we are working hours for those 3 days, and I'm sure that it's going to be even more than just talent fear, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be something that will bring a lot of impact on minds, and this connection is very important. This is something that we need to do every day in our lives, because I realize that it's so important to be Ukrainian and to be kind, you know, because we are now just giving example. That's it. You need to give example every day with your small steps. I'm not speaking about like, okay, we're doing big project, but even small things will show to people. And being humble is very important also. This is what I mean.
Absolutely. But I think one of the most powerful things in your work and what you said as well. And I think, basically, by reconnecting with your roots, not only your immediate roots within your family and our immediate history, but also digging deep as 5,000 years deep, I think what you help to fight is also the same exact narrative that is now being used to erase Ukraine and this genocide, that Ukraine is new. There's nothing old about it. And it's just, you know, an act of imagination of some Russian leader some decades ago. And through art, we can talk endlessly about, you know, history and sharing facts. But I think through art, you can show that in such a more profound and meaningful way. Because when I look at your art, but in general, I'm fascinated with Ciapile. And when I see pottery from Ciapile, there is some energy vibrating from there. I feel that ancient energy, and I feel how I am in some weird ways connected to it. And it's not something you can ever describe in words or explain to people. You just show it. And this is the most profound, I think, way to do it as well.
Oh, yeah, but we have even younger examples. Chernihiv culture of Chernihiv, and so many more to say, actually. And it's my next plan. And also, if we come to nowadays, also Hutsuls, who are Ukrainians that are living in mountains, Karpaty Mountains, I just love them, because I realize that they are the only one who are still preserve Ukrainian craft in their lives. They use craft every day, and this is something that almost every country in Europe lost. So when I come to their homes and see that they use normally for them to use iPhone and at the same time do a carpet or or make a pottery or make the candle with their hand, whatsoever. I'm just like, it's very interesting, and I'm very sure that after this war we will show it to the big amount of people who are going to come to explore Ukraine. And regarding our history, the sad thing is that museums are were constantly robbed by Russia. So all these 100 years, the best artifacts, historical artifacts are actually not in Ukraine. So, for example, not only in Russia, I saw amazing Skiff tiara at Berlin in museum, as it were digged. It was digged out not far from Kherson. I was like, yeah, what can you do? I mean, it's part of our history, but yeah, now that we were robbed constantly by nations. Yeah. But it doesn't erase our history. So my generation need to research it. We need to speak out. We need to make books and make whatever, collections, art, about artifacts that are, it doesn't matter where now it is physically located anymore. We have internet. I mean, you don't need to go to a museum to understand the history anymore. What you need to is to know the fact that it was Ukrainian, it was found on Ukrainian land. And okay, now it's in whatever, New York, Tokyo, Berlin, or Moscow. Yeah, of course, in our perfect life, we need to have it back. But nobody living in a perfect life, right? So we can now just work on awareness. That's it. This is what we are doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think loads of people were sharing this week photos of another museum that was like looted by Russian occupiers in Kherson as they were leaving. And it went viral.
Yeah, Instagram deleted my post. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I got blocked, but erased, and then came back to life. This is part of our reality now.
Yeah, it's getting worse and worse everywhere as well. Twitter has been funny this week as well, but I think it's just to show that, you know, our history, like the looting, and in some instances just the fact that our artifacts appear all over the world is continuing and probably will continue. So as you say, it's like in our hands as well to take this further and to try and restore first our interest in this, and then also the history in
for ourselves. Sure, we are a young country as a state, but we are not young at all as in part of history. But as a state, and we have a lot of very powerful, rich, and smart people who are collecting Ukrainian artifacts also, and I'm sure that they're going to donate it in the future.
Yeah.
Otherwise, even what I see is that half of European museums are donated from families after death or whatsoever. I'm sure that this new money will turn into old money, and then they will start to build the institutions to donate their artifacts, because nobody actually needs to have 200, 3 billion pots in a house, you know? So I'm sure this process will start very soon after the victory. And now we are really reevaluating, and those people are reevaluating their values also. Yeah. And I'm sure that in the end, we will have museums with historical artifacts.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I know our time is running out, but on the point of values, we have one question that we always ask everyone, and it's our traditional question around Ukrainian identity and our own understanding of Ukrainian identity. So we wanted to ask you how your understanding of your Ukrainian identity has changed since the beginning of the war, and what does it mean for you now to be Ukrainian?
It's changed a lot because I reevaluated not myself, because I think I know myself, you know, but I didn't know that my nation is so cool and beautiful. I didn't I was living in a small bubble, you know. I had a lot of interesting people around me, Ukrainians. We were working in the same field. But I couldn't even dream about this miracle that is going on around me, that everyone is special. Everyone is now working and so united. And I really love each person I see. And it's kind of a blessing for me. I don't know. And I hope I will never lose those feelings to my comrades around me. And all my nation are my comrades, you know.
Thank you so much. That's, well, that's 100% agree. I think everyone Ukrainian who's listening as well. And thank you so much for sharing with us today your story, and also so many powerful and beautiful things as well. And I hopefully you will come back to Ukrainian spaces to share more. But I wanted to end, I think, on a note. When I was also looking, researching the episode together with our team, I saw something on your Instagram that actually really hit me hard, and it was this quote from Ukrainian philosopher Grigory Skovoroda.
Yeah.
On a side note, is appropriated by Russia, and Russians call it a Russian philosopher and the founding father of Russian philosophy, but nevertheless. So there's a very powerful quote that says, everything passes, but at the end of it all, love remains. Everything passes except of God and love. And I think that if we say that, rephrase it a bit and say that everything passes except Ukraine and love, I think this is something where I would love to leave us on a message of hope, on a message of resistance, and how Ukrainians resisting not only on the front line with actual guns in their hands, but also with art, with creativity, with powerful messages that reshaping the way the world sees us and the way we see ourselves. So this is something important, I think, we can leave this powerful episode with. So thank you so much, Nadia, once again, for joining us.
Thank you very much for doing this great job. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you. And for everyone else who's listening it as a podcast, thank you so much again for supporting us and downloading us. But most importantly, please rate and comment this episode. This helps us a lot to keep trending. You can find all our other episodes by checking ukrainianspaces.com, where you can also find all the platforms where Ukrainian Spaces live. And please claim the hashtag Ukrainian Spaces online and suggest us Ukrainians to feature, maybe topics to decolonize. We're always love when you share your feedback with us as well. I think one great thanks to Valeria and Tatiana and Solomia, our team, for making sure that this episode is cool and powerful and everybody enjoys it as well. And I think I haven't forgot anything.
No, I think you've covered it all. And just massive thanks to our patrons and to our team who's here with us today, and to Nadia for joining us. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, and the last thing is Slava Ukraini.
Героям слава.
Героям слава.
Bye, guys.